What is happening? Welcome to the Plus Pitch Podcast, more pitching podcasts from PitcherList.com. My name is Nick Paul. Today is July 29th, and yes, we are going to talk about baseball. Quick note, next Monday, I'll be doing the trade deadline stream with Paul Spohr from 4 p.m. Eastern time on Monday through about 6:20, 6:30 that day. If you don't know, the trade deadline is this Monday. It's not August 1st, it's August 3rd. And it ends at 6 p.m. And there are always little extra trades that go in about the 15, 20 minutes after. So join me and Paul Spohr in suits for the one time all year. We've been doing this since, I think, 2019, something along those lines, maybe even 18. Cannot wait for this. And that does mean that the list is not going to come out until the next day. There are always changes that happen because you have teams switching around and it does affect things. Maybe this other guy is going to get more starts. This one's not going to get starts, etc. So I put out the list the next day on Tuesday. So tune in 4 p.m. Eastern time at twitch.tv/pitcherlist to go watch our trade deadline extravaganza. But all right, so we have Gavin Williams having his little breakout from yesterday's game. We have 7 innings, 2 earned runs, 3 hits, 1 walk, and 12 Ks. It's the 4th straight game that Gavin Williams has gotten at least 11 strikeouts in a game. The main difference, what do you know? He's thrown more four-seamers. I remember when he was going sinkers instead of four-seamers for a moment. It made no sense to me. It was a nice little surprise for a moment, but then he stuck with it a little too long. And what did he do 4 starts ago? Well, he started throwing way more four-seamers than sinkers and cutters as well. He's just completely axed that cutter. And in this one, it was pretty much a two-team effort of sliders and sort of really sweepers and four-seamers. The curveball wasn't quite there, but it was phenomenal. And I am convinced that he should be, or at least I'm tempted to give him an ace is going to ace tag if he does this one more time. I mean, literally 11 strikeouts each, and at least I can't say things. He's had at least 11 strikeouts in each of his last 4 starts. Sandy Alcantara against the Phillies, 7 innings of 0 earned runs, 4 hits, 1 walk, and 5 Ks. Look, we like to see that he got back on track, but let's be honest, last start, he should have gone back on track, but they left him in there in the 8th inning, and the 3 base runners, including back-to-back home runs. I don't understand why he wasn't pulled earlier, led to 3 more home runs than he should have. And this is good, Sandy. We just keep rolling with this. Brandon Faught is surprising me. He has an 1.85 ERA and a 1.06 whip and a 5-0 record in 6 games, that include yesterday's game against the Pittsburgh Pirates, who really like right-handers, by the way. 7 innings, 0 runs, 6 hits, 1 walk, and 4 Ks. The thing about it is that along that stretch, he has 6 whiffs per game and a 13% strikeout rate. Not very good. This shouldn't be something that lasts nearly as well as it has thus far, but he does get the Padres next, and then it's the Dodgers and at Atlanta, and we avoid that. Just don't get too caught up in this stretch for him. If you want to Vargas rule it, fine, but this is really a changeup that is doing pretty well, and then you have a mishmash of fastballs and cutters and breaking balls, and I don't really think that this is a true breakout for Brandon Faught. True breakout, though, for Gavin Williams and for Troy Melton. 7 innings, 0 runs, 3 hits, 2 walks, 5 Ks. He has a 1.75 ERA, a 0.93 whip, and a 23% strikeout rate while averaging 6+ innings per start this year. And that includes the 4 innings that he started at the beginning of the year. I mean, it's amazing. That's 11 games thus far. He's really figured out his arsenal effectively. He's using the cutter more. He's getting more whiffs. Troy Melton's dope and makes us feel dope. Gage Jump actually had a really good start. He had some amazing ones early on, and then he's been a lot slower lately. Now this was inside of Sacraverde. It was a little bit scary. The Red Sox are much better against lefties than righties. They've been really hot. 6 innings, 0 runs, 3 hits, 4 walks, and 7 strikeouts. This was more of the same. It was 4 seamers and sliders, making about 75% of all of his pitches. And now he's going to get a home start against the Tigers. He's going to go into Fenway in a repeat matchup against the Red Sox. And then he's hosting the Rangers. Those offenses are not too scary. I understand if you want to go for it. It's a classic case of I need strikeouts, but I'm worried about the ratios. You have Gerrit Cole. Yes, ace is going to ace for him because this was fantastic. Once again, with his 4-seamer, that was the biggest question that I've had along his path to redemption. And it's 6 innings, 0 runs, 4 hits, 2 walks, 7 Ks. That is amazing. Logan Henderson has also been amazing. 5.2 innings of 0 runs, 2 hits, 2 walks, and 7 Ks. 93 pitches is great. He's not limited at all. He has a 21% swing strike rate with a 70% strike rate and 33% usage on that pitch all year. That's his changeup. That's insane. It's such a good pitch. And of course, right, he has this amazing four-seamer as well. He has only allowed more than 2 earned runs once all season, and it was 3 earned runs in 5.1 innings, and he's still ill on July 7th. Guys, Logan Henderson is dope, and you should continue to start him without fear. The Reds had a bullpen game. We have Seth Lugo having a good outing, 6 innings, 1 run, 6 hits, 2 walks, 2 Ks. I know he's allowed a total of 5 earned runs in his last 3 starts across 19 innings, but he also turned just 10 strikeouts in that time. And it's just not really the kind of play that I want to go for, especially with Coors next and then hosting the Cubs. Colin Ray is really good for those mediocre offenses as a good win stream. And once again, he got the dub in Busch Stadium. Oh, we love starting guys in Busch Stadium against the Cardinals. 6 innings, 1 earned run, 4 hits, 2 walks, 2 Ks. That's great. We wipe our hands clean of it now as he goes against the Yankees, and maybe we'll be returned later when he does face the Royals. Aaron Nola had an okay start against the Marlins, a bit of a dusty donut. It was 1 earned run in 5.2 innings, but it was 5 hits, 3 walks, and 4 strikeouts. Not quite exceptional. I don't really think that Aaron Nola is going to be the guy that you really want him to be. Griffin Jacks, another breakout guy here. 5.2 innings and 1 on run, 5 hits, 3 walks, and 10 strikeouts. A little bit different there from Nola with 6 more strikeouts and more than double the amount of whiffs and 19 whiffs versus 8 of Aaron Nola. This is obviously annoying to see those 3 walks. He had 2 of them in 3-2 counts. One of them was a 9-pitch at bat. And look, he's just been fantastic. 3.08 ERA, 1.08 whip, 28% strikeout rate across his last 10 games. That was 52.2 innings, sure, but he's now at 93 pitches, and he was trusted to go back into the sixth at 83 pitches. He struck out 2 batters, and he got the hook. He almost made it through 6 there. I'm a huge fan of this. I think that Griffin Jacks is getting more and more trust from the Rays, and his stuff is just insane. All of his pitches had a 20% swing strike rate or higher, save for the sinker, which was a 72% strike rate. That's amazing. Cal Quantrill, speaking of amazing, 5.1 innings and 1 earned run, 2 hits, 1 walk, and 7 strikeouts there. He's allowed only 6 earned runs in 5 of his last 6 games. Now, the other one, of course, was 6 earned runs in 4 innings and 12 base runners in that one, sure. But he's living outside of the zone. He has a 38% zone rate. Splitters are well outside the zone to lefties and teasing them well enough to get outs with it. And then he's also keeping cutters and four seamers upstairs. A little bit of that Cannibal McSanchez. If you don't know that, that's Colin McHugh and Animal Sanchez, who both had a successful season using high cutters for called strikes. And now we don't really know if Cal Quantrill is going to stick around in this rotation. I don't expect 7 Ks routinely from him, but with Jordan Montgomery coming back as well. And we'll see what happens around the trade deadline. Jordan Montgomery, of course, we have no idea what that's going to look like. I would normally say that they would piggyback in an outing, but Montgomery should go in 2 days. So that's not really the possibility here after about 70 pitches from Quantrill. Maybe it is, but I would not bank on that. Now, if Cal Quantrill would just start again on regular rest, it would be at Houston. That's actually a worse matchup because the splitter was such a major part of this one for Cal Quantrill, that facing a lot of lefties is good, but facing a lot of righties with the Astros, not good. So I wouldn't really go for that if he were to get that next start. Chase Burns allowed 4 unearned runs in the first inning on a 2-2 slider. That was a grand slam. It was a bad slider, but he had an error earlier in the inning that extended it and led to that grand slam. Otherwise, it was 5 innings, 1 earned run, 5 hits, 2 walks, and 4 Ks, about 90 pitches. And it was because of those 33 pitches in the first inning. To be fair, though, he had, I would say, what was it? A lot of 6-7 inning games. I think it was 5 straight that he had early in the season. And then it has only been 3 in his last 10. It is a little bit concerning that Chase Burns has become a little less efficient over the last 2 months or so. But it's Chase Burns. He's still dope and makes us feel dope. Okay, Taj Bradley also experiencing a bit of a breakout this year. I've certainly whiffed on this one, as he had an amazing start to the year and then had 4 starts with at least 4 earned runs, which felt right. That's the Taj Bradley that we are accustomed to. Went on the IL, of course, and then he came back, had 1 more blip, and then all of a sudden, he's been on this incredible run. It's been a 2.94 ERA and a 1.02 whip with a 31% strikeout rate across his last 8 games. And this one was 6 innings of 2 earned runs, 3 hits, 3 walks, and 10 strikeouts. He is no longer a hipster. I'm going to turn him into a cherry bomb now. You just keep starting him. I don't quite believe it in the long term. I don't really think that he's able to throw strikes this consistently forever and also keep the hits underneath 6 hit per 9, which is incredibly fortunate. That's really the thing that's driving this, because usually, yeah, you have a lot of walks with Taj Bradley, but if you don't have a lot of hits, then who cares, right? So those hits will go back up. The ratios will get worse, so on and so forth. Still, you keep rolling with this, and who knows, it could go through the end of the year. I will not be ranking Taj Bradley favorable next year. Cade Cavalli against the Jays, 6 innings, 2 runs, 6 hits, 2 walks, and 3 strikeouts. The questions you ask yourself is, does Cavalli still have the up velocity on the fastball and the curveball? The answer is yes, 97 and 87. Good. Is he still throwing cutters and earning strikes with it? Yes, he threw 14 in this one. Not the most amount. I mean, it was about 14%, but still, we're happy with that. And is the four-seamer earning whiffs now with that extra velocity? Well, no, it was 1 over 25. And we also saw sub 60% strikes in both the four-seamer and the curveball. That's really the big problem in this one. Still, we had a productive 6 innings, 2 runs, 6 hits, 2 walks, 3 Ks for Cade Cavalli. All is good here. I'm going to start him against Atlanta. And we have other guys we got to talk about. We have Reed Detmers and Peter Lambert and so on and so forth. Jake Bennett. And I'll talk about all those and more after this break. Reed Detmers, 5 innings, 2 runs, 4 hits, 1 walk, and 9 strikeouts. Oh my gosh. He had 3 of his 4 starts with 5 earned runs. And then has since killed it with just 3 runs in total in his last 3. The slider is doing great things. He now gets Camden Yards in his tough matchup next. And he's earning strikes with his curveball, which is really cool. And you might be wondering, how am I knowing about all these matchups really easily, really quickly? If you don't know, I actually have my own personal dashboard. It's called Nick's Pitcher Dashboard. And I've been using it since the beginning of the year. I've shared on Twitter a bit. I've shared a little bit here and there with some PL Pro members. But it's not public at the moment. However, we are working very hard to give this dashboard to all of you who have PL Pro as part of our Pro dashboard. We are in the alpha stage right now of the Pitcherless Pro dashboard. And if you have PL Pro listening to this, go to pro.pitcherless.com and you will be able to import all of your fantasy teams into the dashboard and get Pitcherless stats about everything, including our rankings for all your free agents and Process Plus tools, all of the tools that we have at Pitcherless at your fingertips. We are bringing my Pitcher dashboard to you as well soon. I can't tell you exactly when. There'll be a bigger notification about it. But if you sign up for PL Pro yearly, note that we are constantly improving this Pro dashboard. Give us your support and we're going to be making all of these things. Our plan is right now for 1.0 to launch before next year. So go sign up today for 15% off with promo code dashboard, and you can go enjoy pro.pitcherless.com with my personal pitcher dashboard very shortly. It's incredible. It tells you all the future matchups, the strength of those matchups, the next 3 starts inside of my amazing research tool looking at every single game. I cannot express enough how this has been a game changer for me this year, and now it can be in your hands with a guide attached to it. You got to get it. 15% off with promo code dashboard. All right, you can consider Peter Lambert for your teams the rest of the way. It certainly looks like that. 5 innings, 2 runs, 7 hits, 1 walk, and 6 strikeouts. He's looking like a Holly. He's at a 23% strikeout rate right now. He's had those starts of 10 Ks or so. This one was 6. It's nice to see it. He was a bit singled out, and it could have been more, but he got out of some jams with strikeouts and one ground up. Finally, that made it. So it was just 200 runs instead of potentially 6 or 7. Peter Lambert, though, is getting a favorable schedule moving around. We just keep starting him for now. This is really, really good. Jake Bennett is going through a little bit of a harder period. It is 6.1 innings of 3 runs, 6 hits, 2 walks, 4 Ks, a clear, careful Icarus here. That is in the 7th inning. He allowed 2 runs on a 2-run shot, and it was a really good upstairs 1-2 four-seamer that may not have left other ballparks. It was Sacre Verte here. So you could say it was 6 innings and 1 earned run if you would like, but it's not like he was just overly dominant, just 4 Ks in this one. And the changeup was a little bit less reliable, not to mention a lot of pitches missed in the middle of the zone that normally he doesn't, but it has been a little more mortal for Jake Bennett over the last couple starts. And I do want us to consider that, hey, he's solid. He's not necessarily that top 25, top 30 pitcher. He's not that elite swatch quite yet. He's also going to face the Dodgers next. That's questionable for me. I mean, it could go well, but if you don't need it over the weekend, I would honestly bench it. Anthony Kay is looking much better. It's 5.1 innings of 3 runs, 5 hits, 1 walk, and 7 Ks with 14 whiffs against the Yankees. He's loving the sinker inside the lefties, and I dig that. He actually located a ton of these insides. What I saw from the previous start that made me very curious and was looking forward to this one, hoping to see that replicated. But he also, in that previous start, had his cutter inside to righties, which wasn't quite there. He did have a lot of pitches outside the zone, and he's playing that tightrope of kind of like a classic Blake Snell and Cole Reagans a bit, of not really giving in. And that can work. He did a bit here, 300 runs still. He doesn't have quite the same stuff of those other guys, of course. But it's something to monitor here. And the fact that he's really leaning to that sinker inside and nailing it effectively that's really cool. And he gets the Rays and then the Guardians and then the Tigers. I think I'm game for at least one of those, or not two of them, as a stream moving forward. Michael Lorenzen did bad things, and that makes sense. Michael King went 6 innings of 4 runs, 6 hits, 1 walk, and 6 strikeouts against Rocky Road. Very, very disappointing against Rocky Road. He allowed all 4 earned runs in 1 inning. And it's just really annoying because those 2 bad fastballs, and they hit home runs off of them. And then, yeah, sure, there was a solid changeup that got a hit and a bad slider that got a hit, too. Those were 4 base runners. This was otherwise a really good changeup and a solid sweeper that went to town against the Rockies. He gets the Giants next. Fine. We're going to Dusty Donut this one because, yeah, it's really just the ERA because, yeah, 117 whip and 6 Ks here. That's cool. 16 whiffs overall. So fine, Michael King. I'm just still not... I'm still waiting for that really, really amazing start where everything's working and you can showcase, like, okay, I can do that front hip sinker to lefties, no problem. I can put that changeup away to them. I can use my sweeper and my sinker effectively to right-handers. Like, where is that? I haven't seen it yet. Speaking of waiting to see things, Bubba Chandler is still not it. I mean, I wrote about him last week and I was saying, Bubba Chandler, dude, you might be doing something here where you have extra horizontal run on your four-seamer and you have a tighter slider that's more like a cutter a little bit with like 6 to 8 inches of vert, but it's at 92 now. And both of those things returned, but he also now lost vert on his four-seamer. So now it's at like 15 plus inches of vert as opposed to like 17 plus inches of vert. And that's a big difference. Not to mention, he didn't really locate the two and get the massive pitch separation that we want for a mostly four-seamer and slider guy. So not exciting. It's not like Bubba Chandler can't, you know, he's just going to be that bad guy again and can't really be a different person with these new changes, but not encouraging here. And now he gets to go to Cincinnati, which is not a favorable outing. I'm going to wait on the wire there if you want to stash it, because I do want to believe at some point in the second half he's going to come out of his shell after all the reps he's gotten this year. I get that, but I think right now I don't want to start Bubba Chandler. Landon Roop had a bad day, you know, another one. And it was 1 strikeout. How am I supposed to butter my bread with this? He gets a good schedule ahead. I would continue to start Landon Roop, the fantasy pitcher. Slay Ciccone at Cincinnati didn't do well. He did sit 1 to 2 ticks harder, and he only had 6 total whiffs in 2 Ks. Just think about that. Velocity is great, but if it doesn't come with any sort of benefit on the line, who cares, right? Shane Bieber, talking about a bad day, 0.2 innings of 4 runs, 1 hit, 6 walks. Oh my gosh. Oh, this could have been worse, but the bullpen saved him here. And man, 36% striker. He threw 42 pitches for those 2 outs. Look, I'm going to tell you right now, this does not mean that Shane Bieber is this forever. He just could not find it. He's got to stop texting Tatsuya and Mai clearly. And as long as there's no injury, I mean, you just call it an off day and like you hope that he gets back to the feel that he had last time. Justin Robleski had a terrible day where it was 4 home runs allowed here. And they weren't even on like terrible pitches. 3 of them were incredibly competitive. I'm still kind of shocked about it at 2 strike counts. And he had a 0.67 homer per 9 entering this game. Now it's a 9.6. Which is kind of hilarious that he doubled essentially. I'm sorry, 50% growth in that, in this outing alone. It's a one-night bland. He's still at 94, 95, Justin Robleski. I think, whatever, it's all good. Luis Castillo did not do well because of against the Dodgers. We kind of knew that. He hasn't looked good for a bit. It does hamper his trade stock, I imagine. It might be why the Mariners are looking to trade Emerson Hancock instead of Luis Castillo. I will tell you this. You should be stashing Cade Anderson right now. I think the Mariners are going to put themselves in a position where they're going to want one more starter, and I think they just think it's going to be Cade Anderson. So he is the number one guy to stash at this point for the trade deadline. Michael McGreevy had a terrible day. This is what happens when you are a contact pitcher. A lot of times he can get away with it in Busch Stadium. Not today. 1.2 innings of 700 runs, 8 hits, 2 walks, and 2 Ks. Koufax was just like, yo, you know what? I've been too nice to you, and today's not your day, McGreevy. Okay. And Dean Kramer, who had been successful a little bit with his cutter and his splitter, but wasn't quite getting over that hump a bit. 4 innings, 8 runs, 8 hits, 3 walks, and 4 strikeouts. Oh boy. He just could not find the strikes with that cutter and that splitter. He does have a favorable schedule against the Angels, at Texas, and at Tampa Bay. It's very possible 1 or even 2 of those are good, but he's a 15-team hipster, or as I like to call him last year, he's Dean Wolf. That is, once a month, the werewolf will show up and be a beast with the full moon. All right, that is it for today. Thank you all so much for supporting what we do. Remember, go get PL Pro Yearly at 15% off with promo code DASHBOARD, and your price is going to stay the same as we continue to add more and more value to our PL Pro subscription. But that is it. So my name is Nick Pollock, and may your BABIPs be low and your strikeouts high.